Ladies and gentlemen and others, welcome back to PodNut Pro. This is Marvin B, and I am joined by our wonderful co-host and friend, Matt Rainey. Matt, how are you, sir?
Doing fantastic.
Oh, well, fantastic.
Maybe not quite fantastic, but pretty good.
Well, I'm comicastic now, but I wasn't earlier today, and I'll explain that a little bit later in the show. So here we are. We are on show number 116, and we are, looks like we're about 50 minutes from end time, so we need to get rolling. And ladies and gentlemen, we are going to keep this particular podcast under 1 hour.
All right, we've set the bar.
Let's see if we can lower it. So let's get right to it. Matt, how are things going? What's been happening?
A couple things happened today. One actually has been happening over a few days, but the fix was today. But we got a client got an encryption infection today.
Ooh. Was it one of the recent, the pet yas or the...
I don't know which one it is yet. Maybe you can let me know. So what happened is normally it will rename the files, right?
Yeah.
Whatever it is. It'll append something
wait,
to
wait.
It.
Wait, wait. Is it laundry night?
I didn't hear anything.
You didn't hear the little ice cream music in your background?
I toned that out. I didn't hear it. It's laundry night every night. So normally when you get the encryption infection, it renames the files, right? Whatever it is, and then it'll add something to it.
Right.
Either extension or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll get a README or a JPEG telling you how to decrypt them. So this one, and most of the times, it changes the owner, which is the easy way to find out who is the culprit, right?
Yep.
So this one was different. They called and said, hey, our files are encrypted. So normally I log into the server, check it. I can see, yes, all these file extensions are changed, or they got this whatever appended to each file name. I can look at the owner, see who the culprit is. And of course, when the file extension is changed, the little thumbnail changes, right? So it's not an Acrobat PDF file. It's not a Word file. It's just a random, whatever the miscellaneous
right.
default one is. So this one, nothing looked encrypted. I clicked on a few things. They all open. Okay. I don't see any encryption. So we called the client, connect to the computer. They open a file. It looks like a normal file. It's not renamed. And of course, they can't open it. They get the error message. Can't open this file. It's either corrupted or unreadable.
Okay.
So we look at the timestamp, and the timestamp is whatever time. So then I do a search for every file changed today. And I can see at like 9:27 a.m. is the first file changed. And it's just a bunch of files back to back to back to back change. And I try and open those, and they can't open. But the owner did not change. File name did not change. You just can't open the files. So what is that one? I haven't looked in to see which one. And there is no reference anywhere about who to pay, how to pay, what to pay, anywhere. Not even on the source computer. Because since the owner didn't change, I have to go about finding who did it differently.
You got me, because I haven't seen a ransomware virus in quite a while. So I have not seen the WannaCry or the PetYa. So
I haven't seen one in a while either. I'm going to investigate the source computer more tomorrow. But by the time we got back to the office, it was 4 o'clock, and I was already in the middle of dealing with what I'll mention next. So how do you find who the culprit is? None of the owners are changed. The way I find it is, since I now know a timestamp of when it started, I go look through the user folders. Right? The user folders, at least at this client and most clients I set up, their own user folder is only permissions for them and administrator.
Right.
So doing a search through all the user folders, if I can find one that's exhibits these symptoms, that's the culprit. So that's how I go about finding it when it doesn't change the owner, is go look at user folders, because it has to be that person. Or, let me correct myself, it has to be someone logged in as that person, which is why you don't want to share passwords, because if what's-his-face is logging in with your account on a different computer, I might not know that.
Right.
So we found it. Unfortunately, In the past, when I have these ransomware, since I can easily tell what's encrypted by either the file extension or the presence of a text file in the directory, right?
Yep.
So before, I would search for that text file in whatever top-level folders in the share that exist in, I blow away the contents of that folder and restore. But now, since it doesn't exist, I can't really easily tell what's encrypted and what's not. So we got to restore the whole server.
Well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, it does sound like fun.
So here's
a lot of billable hours.
Yes. So I don't know if this will help, but a tool that I saw in my email about a week ago, that of course I haven't really looked to see how true it is or not, but basically, you know how we as techs and, you know, break fix shops, managed service providers, we always get targeted by other companies that want us to use their service. And I won't say who this particular vendor is, but they sent out a email that showed or asked the question, how vulnerable is your network against a ransomware attack? And what they offer is a free ransomware simulator tool. And the tool is called Ransim. And basically what it does is it will simulate 10 ransomware infection scenarios and show you if a workstation is vulnerable to infection.
So what is that site again?
Well, let me put this in the link because it's...
So we have not checked this out.
No, we have not.
Disclaimer, right?
Huge disclaimer. It's called Ransim, Ransim. And I guess we can say...
Oh, it's from KnowBefore.
KnowBefore.
Is it from KnowBefore?
Yes.
Okay, I've heard of them.
So I don't know if this works. I have to assume it does. And obviously, if somebody out there has used this tool and can verify this for us, that would be great. But I mean, I guess to answer your question about how do you know where the infection came from, this sounds like it would be a quick little tool to run. And I don't know how it, you know, must be some sort of scanner based system that'll go out and check all the stations on your network. But that may be something to do. And I'm sure that what they do is, you know, because KnowBefore's MO is to basically provide you with a service that will monitor your customer systems and let you know before something happens that, hey, something's about to happen, and your customers pay for that pre-protection. I know a lot of guys in the ASCII group use it. I haven't evaluated it to see if it's something that I would like to use, but
they use this specific tool.
I don't know.
Just KnowBefore in general.
They use KnowBefore in general. Okay. So I don't know if this is, you know, to me, this sounds like, hey, why don't you try this free tool? And if you like it, here's what it costs to have our full service. That's what it feels like to me, which is probably one of the reasons that I just kind of haven't gone and checked it out. The other reason is because I don't have, or did not have, the time in the last week. But this might be something to help you out if you're trying to figure out, if you know that there's an infection but you don't know where it's from, something like this sounds like a way to do a quick scan on the network and find out.
Well, this sounds like it's that you run this on your network to see if the policies you have in place would stop a ransomware attack or not.
Well, and if they don't...
I don't think it'll tell you where an existing infection came from, but this might be something you could run... that if you fail it, they might say, look, here's a product you need to protect yourself against infection.
Well, it says right here in the description, Ransim will simulate 10 ransomware infection scenarios and show you if a workstation is vulnerable to infection.
Right.
So vulnerable. The question is, do they tell you which workstation, or do they say, hey, your network's vulnerable, pay this price and let us tell you which one.
Right.
That's interesting.
Okay, so I made a note. When I have some free time, I'm gonna try and.
But they got a lot of free tools. I did not know this. They've got a phishing security test, a phish alert button, email exposure check, domain spoof test.
I like the weak password test.
Weak password test.
Type in your password here. We'll tell you if it's weak. No. It is now.
We can do that to any user right now. Tell me your password. Oh, that's not a good password.
Because now we have it. So. Right.
First of all, you told me. So that was the. I just wanted to bring that up because that was the first thing when you said, "How do you tell?" And I'm like, "Well, I don't know. I haven't had an infection for a while, so."
So this actually, this password, weak password test looks pretty neat as well. A lot of these tools look pretty cool. I just wish I had some time to test them, but so you can install it even in an Active Directory environment, and it looks like it's just gonna try and authenticate using some kind of password cracker or common passwords.
Wow.
And see if it can. See if it'll authenticate to some accounts. Does not show or report on the actual passwords. Test against 10 types of weak password-related threats, which I'm guessing is common.
Dictionary, passwords, yeah, dictionary stuff like that.
Their first name, their last name.
Yeah. Passwords.
Because that's actually a pretty big risk. Even if you have a password policy in place on Active Directory, even if you have, let's say, 8 characters, and require complexity.
Mm-hmm.
All that required complexity does is say that you need 3 of the 4 types of characters.
Correct.
Uppercase, lowercase, special characters, and numbers. So password 1 with a capital P meets that requirement.
Absolutely.
So there's really...
I mean, that is pretty complex. How many people are going to think of, you know, password with a capital P and the number 1?
That's probably the most popular password in places that require complexity.
Or password exclamation point.
I didn't got to do shift and hold the button.
That's pretty complex.
Users don't want to do that. And when they change a password, it's going to be password 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then password 3.
So I saw a policy just the other day. I was getting ready for a client, a security assessment. And one of the things, I don't even know if I have it here to pull it up, but I do remember that one of their policies was something to the effect of when a user changes a password, that it had to change at least 4 characters. Oh, I hope I can find this because it was pretty intense where I'm thinking, my clients aren't going to want to do this.
This is an add-in, let's say, to Active Directory?
Well, this is what they wanted in the policy. I have no idea how...
Oh, they want it. You don't know how to implement it, what they're asking.
Right. Here we go. Password management system. So, here it is. So, enforce the use of individual user IDs and passwords. Allow users to select it and change their own password. Enforce a choice of quality. I'll have to find this, but it was something pretty unique where... If they change their password, it could not be one of the last 4, which is, that's pretty common.
Yeah.
But it was something to where it had to change so many characters in the password. So like half the letters had to change. So that way somebody could not just go from password 1 to password 2 because not enough characters had changed. So I know that that's something that Active Directory itself won't do. It will remember X number of passwords so that you can't use the last, you know, say the last 5 passwords, but it's not going to check and see that you changed, you know, 6 of the 8 characters.
Right. At least, I mean, that would be nice to have because it, but even then, let's just say you implement that. Okay. I can get around that just as easy. Let's say I do password 1234. Next time I could do password 2345. 4 characters changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if I'll find this. I'll have to make a note here to look this up because I don't want to waste our time guessing. But it was something that was pretty intense that I'm thinking there is no way my customer is going to be able to do this.
So here's what you do. Of course, they don't want you to have the password either, right? Because you could have approve the password and set the password for them.
Well, right, because that was one of the things is if you set a password for them, as soon as a user logs in, they're supposed to be forced to change the password.
Right, but you would have to because you shouldn't necessarily have the password
right.
Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But if anybody's aware of any kind of, I'd like that for Active Directory. And I'm going to search for this, an Active Directory add-in, because I don't think it's built into Active Directory, to be able to change the password policy. Like, I would want to say you can't use certain words. So say you can't use password. You can't use, if Because a lot of times, I can't tell you how many times I talk to users at a company, and their passwords are all very similar.
Oh, yeah.
Let's say you're doing work at a library. They may have book one. Everybody is going to have, let's say, just as an example, book in their password. I'd want to be able to exclude book as being a part of the password because I know, I have companies, every single one of them is a variation of the same password.
Yes.
Well, because they all want the base. It's like all Latin, and they want the same base, and they just change a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I have a law firm where they use the same word, and the only difference is after that word, there's four numbers. And which four numbers do you think that they are?
I'm going to guess 1, 2, 3, 4.
No.
2017?
No. Last four of a social.
Oh, that's even better.
So that's unique.
Wow.
But how many times do people just openly give out the last four of their social?
Right, because everybody thinks it's public, mm-hmm. public record.
So it's the same word, like it would be book, 1, 2, 3, 4 for this person, and then book 6, 7, 8, 9 for another person.
That's real secure.
So all somebody has to do is just know that, hey, this law firm uses book and four numbers. Just throw in four numbers and try to.
I had a client who. I would love to know if you could implement this password policy. Their password policy was, and I might have mentioned this a long time ago, you had to have a color and an animal. That's the password. Like yellow bird, right? Blue ostrich. And that's what their password, whatever the office manager felt like, and they would change that. So, the next 6 months they might have a number and a city,
Right.
But there was always something like that. I would love to see how a password policy, if you could set something like that. I want to require a number and a city or a color and an animal. And one time
at Bandcamp,
they asked me to set the password and they told me that it was a color and an animal. I think I picked something like, I forgot what color I picked, but it was some weird color. And I think I picked like aardvark or the password was ridiculous. And of course, they emailed back saying, can you please change it to blue giraffe? Because what I picked was
too complicated.
Too complicated of a color and an animal. I think it might have been hippopotamus. And I forget the color. But it was turquoise. Maybe it was turquoise, hippopotamus, or something. But they didn't want to type that in.
Oh, man.
So a password policy. Would be nice,
yes,
in Active Directory to set things like that, even just to exclude a word. Because if I know everyone using book, I want to exclude book.
Absolutely, yep. Well, and definitely exclude password. Or have you ever had people that when you make them change their password, they're like, "Well, I don't know. Why don't I just here Matt one?"
When they ask me to pick their password, I just do a random password generator. Mm-hmm. And I say, here you go. And they say, I don't want to type that in. Well, then think of something else.
That's right.
I don't want to think of your password. Yeah. So yeah, that would be nice. And in book, I'd also exclude B00K.
Well, of course, yes.
Because they think that's secure. They think that's clever. Oh, no one's going to guess it because I use zeros instead of O's. Oh, you're so clever, user.
Hey, you want
password with a P at sign SS, it's all the same. Yeah. I would want to exclude all that. Better, I'd want software that would automatically exclude variations on a word too.
That's got to be out there. It's got to be a high level enterprise thing because, it's got to be there.
Well, hopefully some of our listeners know about this. And if I'm going to search and if I find something, I will let you know because I would like that.
All
right. So, while we're dealing with the encryption,
mm-hmm.
and actually my time on this in particular encryption infection ended when I just assigned the work order to another tech. So.
So you have washed your hands of it.
Well, I still have to make sure he does it and does it in an efficient, timely manner. Because to be honest, I think I have done myself the past 10 encryption infections because I just... was doing them, and but now I'm too busy, and I let him do it. So
you bumped it up to level 2.
I delegated, which is one of my nice job duties. But I'm also looking at an issue with clients reporting that they can't get email from certain users. So that's not uncommon, right? Usually a blacklist.
Users that they've gotten email from for the last year and it just started yesterday?
Right. So, of course, the first thing I do is ask them, what's the email address? I look up the MX record. I see if they're on a blacklist. Mm-hmm. They're not.
Right.
Okay. So, most of our clients go through our Barracuda for spam filtering, which is very, very nice because I can see the whole email chain.
Right.
As soon as they email it, MX Record points to our Barracuda. So I can see right then, if it's in the Barracuda, I can deal with it. Now, if it's not, they've got the wrong address or something, or never made our Barracuda, and I could tell them this is a problem on the sending side, they need to look at it. But if it hits a Barracuda, I can trace it. So I see in the Barracuda, have you ever used a Barracuda?
I have not.
Okay. So you've got a message log, which will give you the status of it. You can search by all kinds of different things. Delivered, blocked, quarantined, deferred. Deferred is an option. Meaning it hit the Barracuda, but the Barracuda can't send it to the mail server. So there's a whole bunch, and it's not just the client reporting it. Because I can look in the queue and see a lot of clients are having deferred messages, which is kind of strange. Nothing changed on our end. Nothing changed on all those clients' ends either. So I started looking up, and there's a lot of different domains. They're all even .gov, carnival.com. There's a lot of domains. Domains people have heard of, not bobsgeneralhardware.com, right? So I started looking up the MX records for all these things. They're all coming from, what is it, protection.outlook.com?
Okay, yep.
They're all coming from Office 365.
Yeah. I was just going to say that I had that happen about a week ago, but it cleared up. So did it not clear up for you?
It did not clear up. So here's my question. The person you were having it, they had a mail server in-house?
Yes. Exchange 2010.
Exchange 2010. What do you have in front of that? Do you have a UTM or anything doing any kind of protection?
We've got that particular client, we've got the SonicWall NSA device doing the gateway antivirus, anti-phishing, intrusion prevention. I do have the RBL blockers, just the standard RBLs, you know, the spam host. But no, we don't have an actual mail filter in front of it, just the SonicWall.
So is it doing any kind of, is it looking at the email traffic? Is there an SMTP proxy that the email's going through?
No proxy.
Okay, so I can tell you what probably happened. At least I know what happened on mine, and it depends on how your Exchange server is set, but maybe this isn't your problem. So last week when it happened, we know that the Barracuda gets it, and we all have watch guards. All these clients have watch guards at their office. All of them have an SMTP proxy policy. So all the emails being filtered through the proxy at the client as well, or in their watch guard. So if we change the policy, if I just disable that proxy and make it a packet filter, just send port 25 to the Exchange server, right? The email goes through. Put it back to a proxy, it's deferred. So it's definitely something in the proxy policy that is not allowing the receipt of that message.
In your proxy policy.
In the proxy policy in the watchguard at the client's office.
Okay.
So it's something in the proxy. Last week, we opened the case with WatchGuard. WatchGuard said it's the gateway antivirus stopping it. So update the gateway antivirus definitions, which they update by themselves every hour anyway. So last week, update the gateway antivirus and email starts working, supposedly. This is what I was told. I didn't see it last week. And I saw that ticket for that client. So this week, I'm looking in the queue management and I see that email to that client is deferred again. So I talked to the tech who did the one last week for this one client, and I told him it's still in there, it's still being deferred. And the date is today. So obviously, if the gateway antivirus was the problem last week. It's not the problem now. Same thing. I did the same thing. I can do a packet filter. It goes through. Put the proxy back in. Can't go through. Disable gateway antivirus. I tried a few different things. It was still deferred. Now, the nice thing about the Barracuda is I don't have to send new test messages. I can go in the queue and say, resubmit this message.
Right.
And if it goes through, it's fixed. If it goes back to deferred, it's not. So none of this is working. So I'm thinking, last week I'm sure we checked the logs last week. Let me check the logs. So open up the live log manager, hit to resubmit the message, red. In WatchGuard, it's either green or red in the logs. I see red, and I see email header length too long.
Oh.
And there is a setting for that in the SMTP proxy to limit the header length to 2,000. I think it's 2,000 characters. I think it is. It's 2,000 is the value. I need to go see exactly what the value is, but whatever it is, it's 2,000 whatever. And I remember...
That's by default, right?
That's by default. And I remember talking with WatchGuard saying there used to be 1,000, but they've increased to 2,000 because they didn't want any chance that a valid message would be blocked. So, I could have bumped up the limit because I can see in the log that the header is just over 2,000. Like some are 2,007, some are 2,050, some are 2,036. I could have gone to 2,500, let's say. But Office 365 apparently changed something because now their headers are exceeding the limit when they haven't been for years, because these WatchGuards have been in place for years with the same policy.
Okay, so you said something different because I do remember an issue, and I just looked it up, where it used to be a maximum size of a header, where if the size was more than 4,096 bytes, that's what would be considered header too long, or what they call the maximum line length.
Yeah, I'm getting there right now because I want to see exactly what that thing says.
Because this sounds different than what that was. Although this one was WatchGuard proxy error, header line too large. So that sounds a little different than what you're...
Oh, come on. All right, that's not good. Let me... this is good podcasting. I've got to change servers. Okay, I'm going to tell you this. This is a pet peeve I have with the WatchGuard. Is there... They update the system manager in the OS constantly, which is good, right? You want it updated. But you cannot connect to a WatchGuard if you've updated the system with even a slightly older version of the system manager.
Really?
So I'm on a server that didn't upgrade. It's like 11.12, and I can't open 11.12.2 or something.
Compliance.
Yeah. So now I'm getting in from a different server. And speaking of WatchGuard, the WatchGuard in my office went out last week. I like that. WatchGuards don't go out very often, but...
I can't say I liked it very much or not.
Ours went out last week. It was dropping packets 80%. Mm-hmm. So we got a new one coming. Oh.
What? Not next day immediate 4-hour response service? For the Matt Rainey.
Well, we got one, but now we just got to put it back in place. Okay. And the biggest problem I have with WatchGuard is that their system manager does not like dual monitors.
How does it know?
Okay, so from my home computer, I have two monitors. From my office, I have three monitors.
It likes three, but not two.
Okay, if I connect from my home computer to my office computer, when I open a policy manager, I cannot see it because it opens in a non-existent window. Even if I set my RDP session to not use multiple monitors, it will not open where I can see it if I'm remote, which is very frustrating because we had the WatchGuard system management locked down to my office IP.
Right.
So I can't open the WatchGuard config from my home IP. I've got to do it from my office. And it doesn't like dual monitors. So I've got to connect to, from my office, another server that only has one monitor on it ever. And then I can connect.
Okay. Hopefully. That sounds like a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, and they need to fix it. Although I guess I could always, when I'm configuring these watch cards, put my home IP as an allowed address, because my home IP is static. But right. I don't want to have to go through and re-edit 200 configs to add my IP.
Is it secure, though?
It's more secure than anything out there.
Does it go above and beyond?
So let's see. Okay.
Wait a minute.
Guess what?
Wait a minute.
I am in now.
You can't push that out to all the routers at once from the management server?
Not all of them are on the management server, because the management server, you have to have an extra license, and if the client doesn't want to pay that to get on our management server, it won't be in there. Okay, so.
All right, so back to what we were looking for.
Set the maximum email header size to 20,000 bytes is the default.
Okay.
So the email header size for Office 365 is exceeding 20,000 bytes.
That's just in excess.
And this is just changed because this. I know some of these routers have been with this SMTP proxy for, I'm just going to say at least a year. I'll be conservative and say a year. And they just started getting blocked last week. So what are they doing to their headers?
What information has to be in there? Maybe it's, you know what, I can't say that. That's a political statement.
So this could be an issue, even if you don't have, if you have some kind of UTM or some kind of proxy, this could be an issue. So their email headers are quite long.
Well, yeah, that's something to definitely, because we're all using 365, and of course Microsoft wants us to use it even more.
I'm sure they're doing something with, I mean, I'd want to guess some kind of tracking or analytics or something that they're putting in their headers to track. And it's just, it's big, and it's causing an issue.
All right.
I saw maybe 10, no, not even 10, maybe 5 to 7 clients reported this. No, I'm sorry, 2 reported it. I saw 5 to 7 in the queues that were deferred, so I took care of all them. So now I've got to go and watch these queues or go start logging into all the routers, watch guards, to edit this policy everywhere. And, of course, I can't bill for that.
Well, no, because that's not their problem. But here's the thing, though. So do you have multiple proxies that you can just change to see if there is a proxy that works? Or are you using one proxy for all of them to get through your...
Well, it's one proxy, but it's got a lot of different settings in it.
Right.
So I know that that's the... It's just a little checkbox. So I get, well, I can either increase the value... Or I could uncheck it to not even worry about the email header length. So what I did was just not worry about it because there's other things in place. I just won't check the email header length. I mean, it's doing gateway antivirus. It's doing, I mean, the Barracuda's scanning it. The WatchGuard is doing gateway antivirus, IPS, advanced persistent threat. There's a lot of other scanning going on. So I can just disable that one feature.
All right. So. Yeah, I had a SonicWall mail appliance a while back, but they're an email security appliance, but I don't think I ever ran into anything like that. And we didn't do any extensive stuff. So it's, you know, the SonicWall mail appliance is the baby Barracuda, I think. So,
right. So that's 2 things that happened today. And they were at least, well, one of them is resolved. The one I was doing, right, the encryption, that's that won't be done today.
Okay. All right, so that was a good today. Guess what happened to me today?
I'm looking. I can tell because I can see you.
You see all of this glory behind me. I've got double windows. I've got a corner office. I today have just moved into my office.
Yep, I'm seeing Marvin with a different background right now.
And now we're not fully moved in, but I've got all of our servers in and up and running. I've got my desk ready. We've got the front reception office manager area. I've got the back. My inventory room is pretty full. And I've got some more equipment coming tomorrow. I got my new bench coming for the tech area. I'm going to bring over. My office is big enough that I'll have a bench over here. I won't give you the 360 tour because you can't see it on the podcast, but I'll show Matt later. And it's nice. But I can tell you this. We just realized that for now, I've been, this makes the 20th official year that I've been in business, although I've been doing this for, let's say, 6 or 7 years before that. So in my 20 years of running MB Systems, this is the longest commute I have ever had. And guess how long that commute is?
Well, I won't guess because I know, and I think people would be shocked how long you have to, and this is all unbillable time.
Yes.
While you're commuting. It's shocking. I'm not sure how you made this decision.
Well, it took a while. But basically, if I Google map this and calculate the distance from my house to my office, 900 feet.
You need to get a Segway for that.
I gotta you know, go out and warm up the car, and but it was nice. It's a good space. It's enough for me, my gatekeeper, and a couple of techs, so we can keep growing the business. And it's right on a nice major street. Not that I'm going to want foot traffic, but if customers want to come and drop off equipment and stuff, they can now do it. And even the other offices I've had, because I've had offices before. They weren't always real offices like this. They were either another townhouse or the next door apartment. So it wasn't my living space. It was at least separate from my home. And my customers understood that. They realized that. But in doing a lot more of the quote-unquote managed services and getting more law firms and more of the business clientele that, you know, they like being able to see that you're a business working with business. So that whole B2B scenario, they like that a lot better. At least my customers do. So
you're going to get some techs? You think you'll have some?
Well,
they can have their own office, or are they going to be in a big open area like with benches? And
It'll be an open area. It won't be. Okay. No,
it's probably a bit better anyway.
Yeah, I ain't got Matt Rainey kind of money. So no,
it's probably better to have him in a big open area anyway. It's easier to keep an eye on.
I mean, I've got to show you this. What's great is I've got a window where I can see into the tech area, so I can actually watch them from my desk.
Right, and that's what my office is. I have a window looking into the tech room, and I've got a nice corner office with, you know, three windows or four windows or something, so I can see out, mm-hmm. and I can look to the tech room too.
Yep. So here's the great thing. So today I'm waiting for, well, you know, I have Comcast, and that's pretty much the option here, unless you want AT&T UVerse or you want to spend the money for fiber, which is going to be ridiculous for an office my size. So Comcast is here, and they actually showed up on time. I wasn't prepared for that. So of course I had to, you know, rush down the street to get to the office. And part of what we're doing is transferring service. What most customers get with Comcast is they will establish new service. And since most businesses of a certain size don't need a static IP, you just either get a new one or you get, you know, dynamic, and they come and set it up, make sure you have internet and leave. Well, in my case, I've got 5 statics, and I use my 5 statics. I've got my servers. I've got a hosted server for another customer. I've got a remote access server. I've got some other stuff that I do, so I need my statics. And I didn't want to have to reconfigure them, so I told Comcast, you know, we're just transferring my statics. They're like, no problem, like they always say.
Right. It's a problem.
So the tech gets here and he's ready. All the wiring is done. Everything. He's like, nah, this is nice. Puts up the equipment and he says, all right, so I'll just get them to transfer the statics and we'll be good to go. So 2 hours later, he's still waiting. And finally he gets a hold of one of his supervisors, and the supervisor's like, well, do they realize that if we transfer the status, they won't have service at their old place? And I had to say, yes, I absolutely know that. That's what we're waiting for. It's called a hot cut. Have you never heard of that before? So they finally go in and do some stuff. And meanwhile, I can't go into it because we're running up against our time cutoff here. But I'm running back and forth between my old office and this office. And at the old office, I log in, I work, and I come back. So I come in, and the tech is looking at me, giving me the thumbs up like it's good to go. He goes, the statics are in. And I know that because I get a text from my office saying, hey, we're down. So I know we're good. So I said, before we go, one of the things that I asked you to do is make sure that the modem's in bridge mode so that I can put my router on and be good to go. He's like, yeah, they said it was good to go. So what did I do?
Fluked it.
I fluked it. So I pulled that out. I've already configured my Fluke to be my router, to simulate my router. I've got a static IP set in, got the gateway and all of that, tested it, boom, fail. I said, no, not good. Made him call back. They're like, oh, okay. So took them about 5 minutes, which is ridiculous. And finally got my statics and all that stuff. So, you know, and I know that he was looking at me going, you, Mr. Falcon. And I'm like, there is no way I'm letting you leave without checking.
Yeah, I mean, he just wants to get out the door. Because as soon as they're out the door, whoo, you're not going to get them back.
Right.
So this whole move, you said you were moving today?
I moved today, yes.
This sounds like it should have been done on the 3rd and the 4th.
Well, I tried. But down here in Paradise, we have a lot of people that, for some reason, because it was originally scheduled for the 3rd, and I got my service call on my automated call on Sunday saying, please be ready for your appointment, blah, blah, blah. And then they never showed. So that, and here's why I think, is because they probably assumed that when they looked at the account, it's actually designated as a home office account. So they probably didn't give a rat's arse about it.
I would call back and say, look, I'm a business. I scheduled downtime on this day. I didn't show up. I had to be down another day. How are you going to compensate me for this?
I did. I called him and I said, not only am I down for my business, but I had to schedule other customers. And I said, you realize I'm an IT company. I have the power to refer you business or not. So all of my customers that I had to rearrange because I'm providing them services that depend on me having my services available, now you've had to force me to rearrange. We had downtime today as opposed to Thursday or Monday when you originally agree. So I made them give me a month of free service.
1 month?
I don't know if they'll give it to me because, you know, somehow it'll be prorated, I'm sure.
Well, even it's still, I guess 1 month's not bad. It's something.
So meanwhile, the commute that I have, you realize I would sweat from the time I walked from my house to my office. It's a 3-minute walk.
So I was going to ask, you don't walk?
It's not this heat.
But if you leave, do you open at 8?
I try to be at my office desk and working by 8:30.
Okay, so it's still not that hot by 8:30.
It could be, have you lived in Florida?
I live in South Louisiana, and it's just as hot, I think.
I think it's a dry heat. No, it's not.
In Florida, we have like 110% humidity.
You got some ridiculous humidity.
It's so hot out here. It is unbearable lately. No breeze.
Hmm. You got Drew,
humid,
Drew Brees.
Hot. No breeze, yeah. No Drew Brees. No, actually, we have Drew Brees.
I was going to say, he hasn't left yet, has he?
No, not yet.
Nobody can afford to take him now.
I know, we're stuck.
Okay, so let's do one thing, because I know that we are, by the time people listen to this, it'll be, well, who knows when it'll be. But I know that our good friend Josh has not received an answer to an email that he sent a couple of weeks ago, and I want to make sure we get to that. So let's answer this email, and then we'll sign off and call it a night.
Sounds good.
And Josh, we apologize. By the time you hear this, I will have emailed you back. So that gives me it gives me a few days.
A few weeks. So you want me to read it and then you can answer?
Yes.
Okay. This is from Josh. Howdy, Marvin. I'm a big fan of the show and the Podnuts Network in general. You guys, and on the occasions when Obando graces you with his presence, have great chemistry and are a joy to listen to. All right, enough rum kissing. I am up in Canada and just getting into small business support and the MSP game. Currently, I am test driving SolarWinds and Ninja RMM with a lean towards SolarWinds at this point. This is neither here nor there for this email, however. I'm going to pause the email. I love the phrase, this is neither here nor there. I love that phrase because it just means nothing. I love it. Okay, email resumes. I have been doing some investigation into Fluke products and threw up a bit in my mouth when I saw the difference in price between the United States and Canada. It is something that you get used to, the prices, not the vomit, but still stings. As I am working on acquiring my first business client, I have limited funds. That said, I think the Link Sprinter is probably the best option for me. As far as I can tell, the only difference between the 200 and 300 is the latter having the ability to give information on distance to a cable fault. Do you reckon? It doesn't sound like it's from Canada, right?
He starts off with that Howdy, sounds like,
and then he gives a rate. Those are the reckon.
Say, that sounds right. Like somewhere between Carolina and Texas.
Do you reckon this justifies a nearly 70% price increase? On Amazon.ca, the 200 is $323.26, and the 300 is $541.19. These prices are, of course, in Canadian dollarettes. Okay, I'm going to pause. Is that the official monetary designation of the Canadian dollar? Dollarettes?
I don't know.
I like it. I like it. Okay. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the Marvin B team. Yeah, I took that to read like the B team, not the A team. But it's actually Marvin. He puts B, like the letter B, dash team, like the B team. Okay. I know you are the best person to ask advice on such matters. So that's what I did. I'm a genius, eh? There comes Canada.
There,
with the A.
There's the Canada.
Thanks for the great podcast and helpful advice, Josh. So take it away, Marvin.
Okay. So, Josh, let me start off by saying that, first of all, thank you for the email. And second of all, I'm sorry, I just drew a blank because I just was, because the live Sunday show had a whole thing in the chat about the B team and who was going to be, you know, Face and who was going to be Murdoch. And of course, I can't escape the fact that I have to be that, you know, Mr. T character.
Bit of a fool. Yes. Is that what they told you?
Yes. So, you know, hey, if you're black and drive a van, who are you going to be? But back to the question. So here's what I'm going to say. I know that, you know, I pretty much, you know, talked the Fluke out of my networking tool. But for those of you this just starting, I probably would not recommend a Fluke unless you can afford it. If you can't, don't sweat it. And this has nothing to do with the difference in currency between the U.S. and Canada. Although, I mean, you guys come down to take other stuff from us. Just find somebody in the U.S. to buy a Fluke for you if that's what's going to take. But I'd be honest, if you're just looking for a basic network tester, go ahead and start with one of the lower tester models like a Noyofa. And I don't know if that's how you say it. That's just how it looks to me. It's an NOYAFA. I'll put a link in the show note. That is a multi-purpose network cable tester and tracer. It will tell you a lot of the things that the Link Sprinter will about, you know, pinouts and breaks in a line and that sort of stuff like that. And that's less than $100. I think there's one model that's 50, another that's 80. And then if you really want to go up there, there's one that's 139. Those are on Amazon. But if you're looking for something that will give you a little bit more in terms of network identification, that will give you, you know, cable testing, report management, then you want to look at a website, t3innovation.com. That's the letter T, the number 3, the word innovation.com. And there's three tools on there that I would recommend looking at before you start jumping into the Fluke family. Now, those are around $600 and up. So, of course, the Link Sprinter falls in between that. I would not recommend getting the 100 or the 200 of the Link Sprinter. I would always recommend the 300. So that's a $399 tool. But if you're looking for the next step up before the big daddies of Fluke that I talk about, you're looking at something like the NetProwler, the NetChaser, are the two that I would recommend at T3 Innovation. They will give you a lot of the same types of tests where it'll verify DHCP, DNS, it'll ping IP addresses, it'll give you some throughput testing, it'll test for PoE, it has the multiple testing and ID remotes. So those are, they're very good products, and this would be a good time to say, if you're going to be at the Washington, D.C. Unconvention, you'll see these in action, because I will be bringing a few of these tools to compare alongside the Fluke.
You're going to be bringing a NetProwler?
I think the one I have is, yes, the NetProwler.
It's pretty.
Yes.
Pretty little device.
Yes. You see all the colors?
Yeah.
So, yes, I will be bringing a NetProwler with me. And I think I got that for, I think it was $700 when I got it.
Right now on Amazon Prime in U.S. dollars, it's $855.
Okay. So I got a special B discount. So
the B team.
The B team. And then, of course, the tool that I have now, of course, is the OneTouch AT. And that starts at the, I think that's about five mat lunches to get started. to get started in the OneTouch arena.
I'm just curious, how did I get known for, do I eat expensive lunches? Is it because I go to Quiznos once in a while?
You can't even say it.
I wish I had an expensive lunch habit. Yeah, the AT, that one's kind of expensive, right?
Yes. Well, it starts at $49.95. And when I say $49.95, that's $4,995. And that is for the AT1000 series. And it comes in the 1000, 1500, and the 3000 series.
Which one do we have?
We have the 3000.
Oh my God. Do we really?
Yes, we do.
It's a lot of thousands.
It's a lot of thousands.
That one's probably more expensive. Oh, Jesus. I look at it on Amazon. It's more expensive.
Well, because you probably looked at the OneTouch 3000 AT, but did you look the whole kit?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's why you had to look for those specials, the buy one get ones.
Yeah. So you're going to bring your OneTouch as well.
I am bringing the OneTouch, and I am actually.
Do you have security?
Well, I have.
There's a lot of equipment you're bringing here.
Everything has their own bag, so they're going to be scanned, and
you're going to have it's in DC. You need somebody standing there with like an earpiece to guard all this.
And here's what I'm working on. Not that anybody really cares, but I'm working on, should I say this on air?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what you're going to say.
So I have my original OneTouch 3000. The one that you and I got is the OneTouch 3000 G2 series. So I have two One Touches.
That's two touches.
That's two for me. And I'm going to upgrade my first one to the G2 as well, because I have clients that I want to be able to do testing across VLANs and VPNs, which two One Touches will do.
Really?
I don't know if I'll be bringing both of them with me, but if I do, there'll probably be one person at the conference that cares.
Right, because I'm not sure how many other people there are going to just be able to say, you know, I'm going to go get two of those as well.
So, all right, did we answer all of Josh's questions?
I believe we did.
So, first of all, sorry.
I like that email. I had it was like a cowboy Texan kind of thing.
Yeah.
With the howdies and reckons and hays.
And just so we talk about, yesterday was a Star Trek day, just so that you know. So, I did not watch any Star Wars. But Sunday was a Western day. I got to watch a lot of John Wayne.
I did see that when I was scanning the guide. I saw some of that stuff.
Yeah. KDL.
We really need it. I'm wondering if we should have actually a show for Star Trek Discovery when it comes out.
Oh, we probably
should. I'd like to listen to a podcast.
We probably should. You know what? We could do a special Podnuts Pro Live.
Because I think a whole show on Star Trek Discovery would be cool. Talking about it.
Okay, let me go back. Are you talking about like one show where you and I talk about the first episode and blah, blah, blah? Or are you talking about...
I'm talking about somebody could actually do a whole series.
A series.
Every week they could talk about the show, the Star Trek Discovery show.
Well, you might have
to... I don't know if I want to do that, but I could...
I was going to say, you might have to find a new buddy for that.
Yeah, I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
We'll definitely have to mention the Discovery show.
Okay. So, The Sons of Katie Elder. Did you watch that?
I have not seen that in a long time, but I have seen it.
That's what was on Sunday. It was nice to watch that.
I think I watched any TV in the past few weeks.
And then I watched The Magnificent Seven. The original.
I've not... Oh, the original.
The original. Okay. So, all right.
You know what? I read two good quotes from Benjamin Franklin.
Oh.
The other day.
Yeah.
I meant to write them down.
You didn't?
I did not.
Give me the, I can name that quote in three words.
It had something to do with, I fear the man who drinks water.
What?
That was one of them.
Okay. Well, that's not the one that I, okay. All right. So that's,
do you know that one?
No, I have another one that has the word fear in it, but try again. What was your other one?
It had something to do with, he was writing a letter home to his wife, and he was almost in a shipwreck, and he talked about how if he was a Roman Catholic, he would have prayed and built a church, but since he's not,
okay, he would have built a lighthouse. You're lost. That's not even, so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you a two for one tonight on the Ben Franklin. So I'm going to give you the most notable fear quote from Ben, and that is, do not fear mistakes. You will know failure. Continue to reach out. I know, it's a horrible quote, but that's what it is. Basically, everybody remembers the part where it says, do not fear mistakes. The quote that you are talking about basically reads like this. I fear the man who drinks water and so remembers this morning what the rest of us said last night. That sounds like a Matt Rainey quote.
That's the one I read.
And we will probably be testing that theory this fall at the D.C. Unconvention, September 16th and 17th. One of those nights, we will test that theory the next morning.
Who's going
to
drink the water?
To see who drinks the water and who remembers what the rest of us said. Okay. So, of course... We could not hold to our timetable, but we're close. So, what did you just put in here?
Oh, that was the other quote that I read.
Oh, okay, we'll save that.
Well, we're close. It's we're not too far over. So,
all right. So I've read the Ben Franklin quotes, so that signifies the end of the show. So, Matt, anything you'd like to add before we end off here?
Just send us comments, questions. podnutspro@podnuts.com.
Right. Yep. All right. So, guys, gals, I reckon that you had a good listen to our show tonight, and we thank
you.
It's good, eh? We thank you for listening and subscribing to the show, and we're going to have a whole slew of shows popping up here. By the time you get to this one, you would have already known that because you will have heard them.
It's a little... A little hindsight, a little blast from the past.
Yeah. But we will keep them coming. And I think there's going to be a triple M in effect here real soon. So be looking forward to that. And so I'm going to go finish cleaning up my new office. Rainey, you go and have some fun. And ladies and gentlemen, until next time, holla.
Hi, this is Matt, the host of the MRP Tech Podcast. Each week, I discuss my adventures in technology in a family-friendly show. I'd like to invite you to take a listen to it, and you can listen to all the episodes over at podnuts.com and subscribe to the RSS feeds to download them directly to your mobile devices. I hope you're enjoying all the great content here on the network, and as always, thanks for listening.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.